Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. William Congreve. Welcome to Grimley.
Chemistry is hard to get rid of. For sure. We are recording. Letting you know right now.
You need to cut all that.
I literally said chemistry is hard. So that was it. We could be talking about science.
We
bitch.
Are. Oh, I
sorry.
I hate it here.
It's okay. We all do.
Welcome to Grimley.
That's your reset?
Yeah.
That's the reset bell?
Yes.
All right. Welcome to Grimley.
Never happened in the before times. Doesn't exist.
If only it worked like that, unfortunately. But we are two unserious people that talk about serious and creepy shit. I am Missy.
And I'm Meg.
And we are back.
We're back with part two.
We're back with part two. I would also just like to put on the record that you said you missed my dog.
I do, yes. I do.
Yeah.
Because we were traveling together. Was it last week? The week before.
I came back last week. So last Friday, you guys flew back and I drove.
Okay, so it's been, yeah, anyway.
It's but been like
he was around.
Can we talk about how fucking hard it is to find a beach on Tahoe? We didn't talk about that.
Okay, sure.
Tahoe, what's your goddamn deal?
I mean, lesson learned that you do need to rent property right on the water.
If yeah.
you want beach access.
Yeah.
Or no dogs, I think it would have been.
Yeah.
There was no way that the dog wasn't going to be there, obviously, because you were doing a road trip with him. But if I planned another trip to Tahoe, then it would be noted that it's probably slightly easier
yeah.
to hit a beach.
Or or have a private beach.
Yes.
Where it doesn't matter. But yeah, we were...
But we found a good one. And
yeah,
I thought we had a nice time.
Yeah, there was a lot of ladybugs at that beach.
I know. So I think it was kind of part of the charm.
It was an unreal amount of ladybugs.
It was, but it was kind of really cute.
Weird. It was cute. It's like the cutest bug to harass you, for
yes,
sure.
And they would.
And they
were climbing all over us.
I know. It was like, what the fuck is happening? A little bit. Yeah. It was a weird...
At one point was like trying to convince myself that they weren't climbing out of the sand because they were just all over the place.
Yeah, it was weird. You know? It was a little alarming. Like, why are there so many ladybugs in this vicinity?
I was fine with it. I was like, we're some kind of... This is...
Yeah.
You know, magical... witchy behavior.
I'm in magical ladybug land.
Yes,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. But like the paddleboarding situation was also a shit show.
No, oh, man. It wasn't. I thought we had a good beach day.
Yeah, I schlepped that paddleboard all over the country.
Well, that's true. You didn't use it at all?
Uh-uh.
You didn't use it in any of the other parts of the trip?
Uh-uh.
Damn.
I know.
That's okay. But you know what? We are coming into summer season.
I know. Yeah.
It's time to bust it out.
I will. Yeah, for sure.
I'm ready for that.
Yeah. Getting ready for summer.
Best time. We wait all year for this.
Really, the Pacific Northwest, we're like really hanging on. By our claws.
Actually, the weather's been quite nice. We are ready to go. It did rain this past
week.
It did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's so boring. Let's finish the story. I can't wait.
We had like the same vocal stem. That was wild. Okay, yeah, let's get back into the Betty Broderick
where
story.
Where we left off was she...
We've literally only been like a half an hour break. Just gonna put it out there.
The way I'm struggling.
I know, this has been a week for you guys. This has been 30 minutes for us.
But to be fair, this week has been a week for me.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Give us a recap.
The bitch is back together with his mistress.
The bitch being Dan.
Yes. And
the mistress being Linda.
Yes. And Betty is not quite sure about it yet. She's in denial, or she's
living in denial.
Yes, because not too long ago they were working it out. Mm-hmm. She was very hopeful enough that she was like, maybe I have another child with this man in my late 30s.
Uh-huh.
Yikes. Enough to have a surgery to reverse her.
Or do IVF.
Right, but he won't do that. And then she has a blow up on Christmas because she's a bit unhinged.
Because he gives her a tiny little POS ring, according to her.
Right, which I'm sure it was beautiful. And it also wasn't large enough to apologize for all the nonsense that Mm-mm. she's been through. So yeah. I understand it. And so he leaves.
Yes.
He leaves her.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dan leaves after that Christmas fight. So, yeah, Betty blows up in front of Dan, in front of the kids during Christmas because he buys her a shitty ring that she thinks is shitty. I can't say it's shitty. I don't know what the ring is.
Haven't seen it.
No. And then at the kind of at the same time, Linda's in a relationship. Her boyfriend gives her an ultimatum, basically being like, hey, you seem very obsessed with your boss, and your boss just called you saying that he needs help with something, and you're about to leave Christmas plans to go help him.
That relationship is over.
And he was like, dude, like, you gotta ultimatum, basically. He gives her an ultimatum. She chooses Dan.
Feel bad for this dude.
Yeah, I do too. He seemed like he really loved her and really wanted a future with her. In their later interviews, he's like, guys, like, I just wish she would have chosen anyone else.
Right.
You know, unfortunately. Yeah. Honestly, like, Linda seemed to really love Dan because the shit we're about to talk about, I don't think I would stay.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So during that Christmas fight, Dan leaves the home and stays in Palm Springs. And I think it's safe to assume that Linda joins him at some point in Palm Springs as well, because she basically leaves her current boyfriend.
Yeah, and Palm Springs is, I don't know, 2 hours away from.
Yeah, it's really close to San Diego. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So by February 1985, Dan tells Betty that he's leaving. And he admits later that he doesn't say, let's get a divorce. He says that he needs to be separated for a while because things have been great for a while and he wants some time to process this whole marriage. So Dan goes and moves back into the home that they have while it's being renovated. Because remember, they moved out of their house for a while because there's like some really big structural renovations that needed to happen. But he moves back into the house.
Why won't he just be up front with her? It's the lying is still happening.
I know.
He really is stringing her along instead of just telling her the truth.
It's like he's like a little kind of a punk bitch.
Yes.
For lack of a better word. Yes.
And this is part of the problem in a lot of situations exactly like this. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, why don't you just say what it fucking is?
Yeah. Just say you don't love her anymore.
Yeah. And that's
like, and that hurts easy to and do. That sucks. Uh-huh. And but I mean, maybe you don't want to admit to yourself, but like clearly...
That's what I'm saying. Was he convincing himself that he needed time? It just seems like
it just feels like
bullshit.
That, yeah, it feels like that deep Catholic guilt is really ingrained.
But you see people doing this same behavior who aren't Catholic. So
that's true. That's very why true.
I'm like, I don't
get it.
What else is it? It's so regular.
I know. I think it's just admitting that you're just ready to move on with your life. I think change so is
scared to be up front.
Even if you want change, I think it's scary.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe he thinks that if he does it more gradually, it will be easier somehow.
It does kind of seem like he's maybe trying to tiptoe out because Betty is so volatile and kind of eruptive. And I think he's maybe also hoping that she eventually just wants to file for a divorce.
Sure.
Which is kind of the classic.
Yep.
I want to hope you break up with me instead of me having to break up with you and do the hard thing.
Yes, I'll be the worst until it's your idea.
Yeah. And so I think that's kind of what he's hoping for. Okay. So in Betty's mind, this is a separation for now because he says, let's get separated for now. I need to take some time. I need to think about things.
Yeah.
But she's kind of thinking that things are going to go back the way they were. And Dan just needs some space, which is not good. She needed a true fucking friend.
Yeah.
To be like, girl.
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Right. So in Dan's mind, the marriage is over. He's like, I'm moving out. Christmas was like the last straw. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when he finally files for a divorce later, he puts February 1985 as the beginning of the separation.
Okay.
And this is a surprise to Betty. She says she saw that. She was like, what the fuck? So she just truly, rose-colored glasses are a hell of a thing.
She does get to a point where she willfully will not see what it is, though. Right? I mean, she goes...
Yeah. This is Betty's descent to madness, honestly. So in Betty's mind, separation for now, Dan needs some space, but Betty doesn't feel this, like during the third-degree divorce, and she's hoping that Dan will come around, but she's also starting to get very bitter. and angry about the marriage itself. And she begins to isolate and unravel a little more. Because at this point, she's like, that's all she can talk about is like Dan and like the marriage and like how he's like treating her. She's her friends are like at this point are like, Jesus fucking Christ. You know, it's just like the friend.
Yeah, it's a lot.
You're like, I cannot
have this conversation yet again.
Like, I can't keep doing this with her. It's just like she's becoming that friend, unfortunately. And like it sucks.
Yeah.
To be on both sides of that because probably she probably feels like it's a compulsion. She can't help it now.
It totally is. Yes. It's become obsessive.
Mm-hmm. So Dan is also now fully dating Linda. Like openly, this is my girlfriend. And she's taken to her events. Like they are in a relationship. Yeah. It's no longer an affair. Like she is his girlfriend. And he admits he's in love with Linda. And he begins about thinking of with life with her.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, this is who I'm moving forward with. Right. So in April of 1985, Betty takes the kids on the Easter vacation. This is a fucked up part of the story. And when they get back to the rental house in La Jolla, because remember, she's staying in the rental, he's staying at the house.
Mm-hmm.
So they're separated. She has the kids. So she takes them on a vacation and the house is infested with rats. The La Jolla house, the rental house.
Okay.
So Betty, she calls Dan, starts yelling at Dan. And telling him that he needs to get over here. He needs to take care of this. He needs to take care of the house that his kids is in. She's like, this is, you need to fix this. And Dan's like, call an exterminator. What do you want me to fucking do? You have credit cards. Just call the exterminator and go get a hotel. It's not that serious. Or
okay.
Right. It's an easy fix, right?
Sure.
So he does that. He hangs up on her because she's being like kind of bitchy towards him. He's being a bitch to her. They're fighting with each other. Neither of them are thinking about the kids. So Betty instead decides to have her and her kids kill the rats.
That's weird.
Themselves.
That's really weird.
So she gets like a bunch of traps and the kids talk about hearing the traps like close on rats all overnight. There's also a moment when there's a rat in the oven and Betty turns up the oven.
How are there all like how did the rats get?
I don't know.
Okay.
And she doesn't like in front of the kids. And so they watch this rat get roasted alive, which is really fucked up.
Gross.
There's also a point where she finds a baby rat and she makes the kids watch her flush it down the toilet. These are like 9-year-olds.
That's really crazy.
Like Kim's a little bit older. She's a teenager at this point. But this is fucking crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Because what Betty wants to do is she wants the kids to tell Dan, oh yeah, we had to kill the rats. Because they were in the house and you weren't there.
Yes.
That's in her mind. That's what she wants to happen.
Yeah, because she's doing the most to get a reaction because she wants him to show up.
Yeah.
And she wants to be around him.
Yeah. Right.
Have a conversation. Exactly. Instigate a conversation. It's
Dan doesn't like having the kids' well-being in mind.
Right.
You know, unfortunately. And so, obviously, Betty isn't. But Dan's also being like...
Just doing his own thing.
Yeah. Just doing his own thing. Because he's just hanging out with Linda, right?
Right.
So, April 12th rolls around, which would be their 16th wedding anniversary.
Mm.
And it seems like maybe they had plans to go out to dinner together.
Okay.
Which doesn't seem like a good call.
No. I almost doubt it. I bet.
Not like, in this scenario.
He was like, ooh, maybe.
Trying to appease her, maybe. Yes. Yeah. But... Dan cancels last minute on Betty.
Yeah, he cannot do that.
He basically calls you, he's like, oh, I have a meeting that came up. I'm sorry.
He never planned to go.
Mm-mm. This doesn't go over well, obviously.
Yeah.
It's just like he's doing the, like making the worst possible decision every fucking time. It's like when you watch a TV show and you just watch the character just make the worst decision every goddamn time. And you're like, what are you doing?
That was
doing.
Marty Supreme, the entire movie.
That's like, oh, I didn't. I could not.
I know, but it was like exactly that, where you're like, this is a calamity of bad decisions.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah. So Betty also is told by the kids at this time that sometimes Linda comes over when they are visiting their dad, because they're visiting their dad a weekend, right? So the cat is basically out of the bag that Dan and Linda are together. And so Betty decides over the course of 4 days to start dropping the kids off at Dan's door unannounced.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're like crying.
Yeah. Like, I remember upset. Watching this.
She leaves them. She'll like leave one. She'll leave the next day. She'll bring the other one, leave, then kind of, you know, over and over until all the kids are at Dan's house. And when I say a few days, it's basically at your doorstep whether dancer or not,
yeah,
they're your problem.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
And in her head, she's, oh, Dan's gonna realize how hard it is to have kids. And
yeah, like, well, it's unfair.
Yeah,
she's the one dealing with.
She's been dealing with it the entire time. Yeah,
and he's over here just with his new girlfriend. I would be livid.
Yeah, and she's like, you deal with him now, right? This unfortunately backfires on Betty though, because Dan is now like, hey, thanks for just leaving the kids here. I'm actually going to take full custody now.
Right, because you're actually being called cuckoo bananas now.
Mm-hmm. And he does. And Dan uses this as an example, Betty just leaving the kids at his door, of her being an unfit parent, and she cannot be the primary parent. And so he gets full custody.
I would argue that it's not a bad judgment call.
I don't think it's a bad judgment call either. I will say,
you're not thinking about the kids. You are clearly so separated from your responsibilities as a mother that you don't care about anything except like revenge on this man, or like getting his, whatever it is, it's clouding enough that it's not really not fair to the kids.
Yeah. I would also say Dan probably does this strategically when it comes to the legal sense, because now he doesn't have to pay child support.
Oh yeah.
Because now he has full custody.
He's like, well, okay, well, yeah. If I'm going to take the kids, then I won't have to pay you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And he's a lawyer. Let's not forget.
He is a lawyer. Yeah. And he's documenting all of this, unfortunately. So Dan also does start hiding assets because he's getting ready for a divorce.
Yeah.
He's preparing himself. Betty's still, we're going to figure something out. She's still
delusional.
And it sounds like he was starting to give one of his brother's company in Colorado money as a way to
just really been truthful with her. I don't know. She might have still acted this way, but it's like, you helped create this
scenario.
Yes, dude.
God. Okay. Should have grown a pair.
Yeah.
And just fucking owned up. I'm sorry.
Clear is kind.
Mm-hmm. He's like hiding assets to make his wealth look smaller, so he doesn't have to pay quite as much alimony to Betty. But he does tell Betty that he's going to sell the Coral Reef home that they bought together originally, and he will give her half of the money. And he's like, and I will also pay alimony. He's telling her fully.
Yeah.
And right now he is giving her basically a voluntary allowance.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's $9,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if he's making 6 figures a month, that's fucking pennies.
It's not very much.
No. Not very much. So she's still pissed about that. So Betty is still in the rat rental house at this point. That's what I call it.
The rat rental.
The rat rental, yeah. And she's now without the kids because now Dan has full custody. And she begins spiraling more. And she also starts losing friends because her friends say that Betty was impossible to be around during this time, because all she ever did was like talk about Dan and his whore is how she referred to him, her. Linda. It's like, I can't imagine, because we're kind of her age now. And it's just like, I cannot imagine trying to be friends with somebody like that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we'll try, be like, you need some therapy. You need
Because eventually it is not helpful to you to keep holding on to this. It's really time to like,
move on.
Yes.
Yeah. And her friends are trying to do that. Be like, hey, maybe you should go meet somebody else. You know, like,
get your own whore.
Get your own whore. Maybe, I don't know, get a part-time job somewhere. Just do something for yourself. And she just will not. She's dug her heels in.
Because she's watched her life just deteriorate. Her whole life is now, especially now that the kids are with him.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, he has the same life that I'm just not in it anymore.
She got replaced.
Yes.
She fully just got replaced by someone younger.
Yeah. It's very painful.
Very, very painful. Really fucking sucks. So Betty also begins trying to get Dan's attention again by doing the same thing she did before, by racking up the credit cards that are still in their name. And she does some really extravagant spending sprees. Like, she buys a Corvette.
Okay.
I can't imagine buying a Corvette with a credit card.
Well.
This is a different bracket of money, for sure. But this kind of backfires again because Dan officially files for divorce later in 1985. He's okay, I gotta squash this.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like eventually Dan tries to like kind of use the legal system in his favor. Obviously, he has friends. He has, you know, and like he does something called like a bipartisan sort. I don't remember the name of it. It's some sort of divorce where like they're officially divorced, but they haven't figured out the finances yet.
Okay.
And he's able to do that without Betty's consent.
Oh.
Which is kind of fucked up.
Interesting.
And I think that's part of, if you watch the Netflix series, mm-hmm. there's like, they kind of
go into it a little bit.
Yeah. Where like she shows up to the hearing, but no one's there because like they moved the hearing and no one told her. It sounds like they're kind of doing that type of stuff. So he's able to get a divorce because it's no fault divorce in California, even if he did cheat on her. Mm-hmm. So he's able to get a divorce without dealing with the finances right away.
Okay.
So he's able to legally like separate from her, but they still did.
So he's got all this time to hide.
Yes. Stuff? Yeah. Jesus. So that's kind of what happens in 1985. He's like, we're legally divorced. We're still figuring out the finances though. It's kind of like the type of divorce he files for. And I think it's served in a very public way too. She's like at a lunch with friends and like someone walks up. It's like, oh, Betty. And she's like, oh yeah. And they're like, you've been served.
I wonder how much you can weigh in on how that goes down.
I don't know.
Hmm.
That's a good question. I've never been served papers.
Me neither.
If anyone has served someone papers, can you let us know?
Yeah.
Do you? Gribbly Podcast.
Is it up to just whoever is doing the serving, or are you like paying them to do this for you? And I don't know. Just like, was it intentional or just that happened to be the way it happened?
I don't think you get paid. I think you have to ask somebody to do it.
Oh, really?
I don't think you get paid to serve papers.
You don't? That's not like a job that people have?
I don't think it's a job.
Oh.
Maybe.
I have no idea.
I have no idea either. Because honestly, if I could just drop some paperwork and be like, bye.
So the reason I asked was because I think it was Jason Sudeikis that was with Olivia Wilde. Yes. And like she was on a panel.
Yeah.
And she was served and there was a lot of like back and forth about that. And it's like,
this is fucked up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's how much are you involved
with that as the process?
Yeah,
that's a really good question.
Because similar, it sounds like it, you know, comparable.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, so she gets her papers. She's pissed about it, and she's able to come in and out of the Coral Reef home because it's their house together. Mm-hmm. You know, she drops the kids off, picks them up. She dropped them off a couple days after getting served papers, and she sees a Boston cream pie on the counter, which is more of a cake. It's always bugged me.
It is such an old school dessert. Yes, yeah. A Boston cream pie. It is a cake.
Yeah. It's a homemade one. And okay. Betty's looking at it because one of Dan's favorite desserts. And so she's grilling the housekeeper, this poor housekeeper. She's like, who made that? Who made that? You have to tell me right now who made that. And finally the housekeeper's like, it was Miss Linda. Like, I don't know what you want from me.
You're like, why? Obviously, it's Miss Linda.
Like, why are you fucking cornering me?
You think Brosef made this?
No!
No chance.
There was actually a moment where the kids talked about when they first were dropped off at Dan's, he didn't know how to cook.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
he just,
I believe that.
He made them steak and potatoes every night because he's like, this is what I know how to cook. Okay. Which is not
bad. It's not the worst.
No. Just toss the Caesar. You got all your food groups right there.
I guess so.
Yeah. But then he eventually is able to hire people. Right. Which is funny because remember at the beginning, during their honeymoon, he kind of kicks everybody out. He's like, you're the person that's supposed to do all this.
Very strange.
I know. Very, very strange. So Betty takes this Boston cream pie and she takes it upstairs into the main bedroom and she smears it all over the bed.
That is fun. And it's like, it's a little, at this point, it's uncool. You guys are no longer together.
I know.
So now you're unhinged. If you had done something similar, I don't know, 2 years ago.
Right.
I would say, nice.
If you maybe found the hotel room that you knew that they were fucking in and did this.
Yes.
It sucks. Different story. It sucks for the staff.
That's a good point.
But still.
Okay. She should not be doing this.
No. So she takes Boston cream pie. She smears all over the bed. She smears all over the walls. She smears all over Dan's new suits.
Oh, fuck.
She's really going for it. So Dan is like, okay, now I'm filing a restraining order.
Yeah. As you should.
Yeah.
As you should.
Yeah. You truly have come off the rails.
But she was 17.
I know.
And she gave her whole life to this man. Now, mm-hmm. The problem is she's still young enough. She needs to recognize that. You got a lot more life to live, honey.
Yeah.
But like at this time, this would be very painful.
The 80s is a very different time, especially from the aging with women, too. Yeah.
True. That's true.
Yeah. Dan files a restraining order against Betty. So then a few days after the restraining order, But he then throws a wine bottle through the coral reef home while everyone's sitting there having dinner.
Oh, no.
She's just fucking furious. Yeah. I think she's furious that her kids are, like, cool with it. And she constantly badgers her kids, too, unfortunately. There's a moment, I think it's Kim. Kim is the one that's like, fuck mom, a little bit.
Yeah.
But Kim is graduating high school. And she obviously invites both of her parents. And then also because her dad, Dan's coming, Dan's going to bring Linda.
Yes. And they live with Linda.
Yeah, and they kind of basically live with Linda. I don't think Linda was fully living there.
Oh, okay.
I think Dan had co-signed on a condo for her.
Oh, okay.
A while back. That and makes so sense. She kind of had her own place, but she was definitely there nearby, frequently.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But so, yeah, so Kim's graduating high school. She invited Dan. Dan brought Linda. Benny also showed up, was furious that Linda was there and would not let it go. Was like taking pictures of Linda at graduation. It was very weird. Kind of obsessed with her.
Yes.
And then Kim kind of just wanted to get away from all of this. She gets her own apartment, like 18. She's like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. But she invites her mom over for lunch and she wants to show her mom the new apartment. And her mom canceled on her last minute.
Hmm.
She's like, I'm not coming over because I actually kind of hate you.
Oh.
Saying some, we'll get more into the visceral shit she says to her kids. But it's basically like, you're a traitor. You sided with Linda.
Oh, no. It's just a real immature
It's
woman.
Very immature, unfortunately.
This is wild. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, Betty throws a wine bottle at the home.
I'm like, is she doing drugs or is she drunk? Is she drinking?
I'm
like,
she might be drinking.
I'm like, what? This is toxic.
I think she needs to be on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Betty asks Dan to come over and sit down and talk. And she's pleading with him. She's like, we need to work things out. Like, I know things have gotten kind of crazy. We need to figure this out. Like, we need to do this for the family. Let's sit down and talk. And Dan's like, okay. He goes over, sits down, talks to Betty. He's like, listen, whatever you think this is over. He finally says, we are getting divorced. He admits the affair.
Mm-hmm.
How extensively he admits to the affair, we don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hearsay. But he fully admits that, like, I'm in love with Linda. I'm moving forward with Linda. Linda's my person. We are done though. Like, he's like, we have a relationship as co-parents
mm-hmm.
to make sure our kids are happy. I mean, happy is subjective here, right? But we are, as a couple, are done. Marriage is truly over. So Betty begins trying to find a divorce attorney.
Now. Okay.
She's like, okay. But she's having a hard time finding an attorney in San Diego.
Yeah.
Because Dan is now the president of the Bar Association.
Yeah, there's all kind of conflicts.
He's in, like, there's a lot of fucked up stories. I don't know if Dan was necessarily manipulating the system, but definitely he wasn't helping, to say the least. So they had a family friend who was a family law attorney, like one of the top family law attorneys in San Diego. And Betty asked, hey, can you represent me? And he said, actually, I can't because I am actually moving to becoming a judge. And I'm trying to unload my caseload right now.
Mm.
Next hearing, he shows up. He's representing Dan.
Oh, no.
So all these people that, like, were in her circle all fucking turn on her. And I'm not saying it's unwarranted because she definitely is doing some unhinged sure. shit. But it's also really fucked up to watch just, like, an entire, like, legal system turn their back on this woman because they have a lawyer friend.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Betty also isn't helping the situation. Like, it's just like, everyone fucking
sucks.
She
didn't need a local San Diego lawyer.
That's why she started going to LA. Oh, good. But she also, I think she also kind of wanted to find someone in their inner circle because she wanted it to sting more with Dan.
Fine. But again, we are missing the point.
We're missing the point fully. And she goes through a lot of attorneys because she's very difficult to work with, and they're trying to be reasoning with her, like, hey, we should ask for this, we should do this. And she's like, no, I want to win. Mm-hmm. It was her ultimate goal. She's like, I want to win. I want to take him for what he's got. I helped him build his empire. I deserve it.
You deserve half of it.
Yeah.
Which is a lot.
Yeah. But Dan's also at the same time hiding his assets and sneaking behind and doing kind of shady shit on the other side of it. Mm. Neither of them are really working in the best interest of what they should be, which is the kids.
True.
Right?
Because
really, Dan has plenty of fucking money.
Right.
Just be like, here, take it.
Yeah. How bad do you want your piece?
Yeah, exactly. Evidently not enough for Dan. Basically, she's having a hard time finding an attorney. But, like, if we zoom out for a second, That was a good time. So Betty has now lost custody of her kids. The kids, she's, you know, that's been her whole world. Dan is hiding assets and seems to be doing some sneaky legal maneuvers to get out of paying Betty what she thinks she's owed because she supported him through medical and law school, right? Betty truly does feel like the victim. She thinks she is the victim. Regardless of what she has done, she's like, I am the victim here. You cheated on me. You lied to me. You broke your vows. I supported you. Mm-hmm. You're not giving me what is due. And I would argue that in a lot of ways, she is the victim at this point. Mm-hmm. Yes, she's fucking unhinged and crazy. If see, this was our friend, be like, you need some serious medical.
Yeah, but he's a bad guy.
He is a bad guy. Yeah.
It's getting harder to tell at this point.
Absolutely.
But yeah. Yes.
This is like the point where you have a conversation with a friend. You're like, what is the end goal here? Because yes, you are hurting more people than you're helping. Yes. You're hurting your kids. Mm-hmm. Let's think about that. Mm-hmm. But Betty starts to make some really problematic and fucked decisions after this. After like the filing for the divorce, finding the attorneys, Dan is able to get a divorce without her knowledge, mm-hmm. like without the financial stuff that's still being figured out, but he's divorced her. So in Christmas of 1985, Dan takes Linda and the kids on a ski trip. Originally, he told Betty to take the kids. He's like, you should take them. It's been like our annual thing. I think they would like to go with you. I know they miss you. I will pay for it. Mm. But Betty is like fighting with him about the amount he's going to pay for the ski trip.
Okay.
She wants more. He's like, that's too much. Like, she's like asking for egregious amounts of money for the ski trip. Dan's like, no, I'm not doing that. Mm. And Betty's like, well, fine. I'm not taking them. It's like, oh, okay. I'm going to fucking take them. And I'm going to take Linda. And unfortunately, it also comes back on the kids because Betty's like, you went with Linda on a ski trip. Like, once again, they're traitors to her.
Jesus.
Which is really fucked, unfortunately. Yeah. So Betty's furious that the kids are on the ski trip, that they went with Linda, that Dan took them. Like, she's, I'm here alone by myself again.
It's like she hates this man more than she loves her kids.
I know. It's like all the love she had in her heart just turned into fucking rage.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So she says, like, are you going to take the kids with your whore? I'm going to go break into your house and I'm going to slash all of Linda's Christmas presents with a knife.
Oh.
She like slashes every Christmas. Wait,
she
present.
Does this?
She does not this.
Just threatening him? No. What she does?
She doesn't threaten. She does it.
Oh, no. That is escalating.
It's escalating.
I would be terrified at this point.
If I'm Linda, I'm fucking out of here.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Be just like,
my condo. I'll sell it and get another one, please.
Real seriously.
I
like,
need to move.
I'm
going to witness protection.
Yeah, like, I'm just going to move away for a while, maybe in a couple
but she
years.
She loves this man.
She
I
really
feel like she was basically groomed by this man.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. She was 21, yeah, when they met. So it's all not good.
Yikes.
Like,
I'm like, girl, is he even really worth all that?
Honestly.
He got all these kids. I know he has a lot of money, so.
He has a lot of money, but he has.
But that doesn't seem like her. That's not what she's.
No, I mean, she's also Catholic him. And she wants kids, too. Yeah, that's always been the plan. Fair. But this crazy fucking ex-wife. At this point, I'm like, she's going to kill me.
I would be concerned.
I'm like, I'm getting the fuck out. And Linda was, I think, for sure. But like Dan kind of brushed it off.
Like, he always did.
Mm. Unfortunately.
Underestimate your wife yet again.
I know. So then Dan's like, okay, I'm going to buy a new house.
Okay.
We're moving.
Yeah.
We're getting the fuck out of here. Maybe Betty feels a certain way about this house because it was her house and like maybe we shouldn't be living here. Like it's
right.
Time
we're just
for,
making it worse.
Let's move.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what he decides.
Good. It's a good plan.
And so in some legal way, I don't know how, I don't know anything about the legal system, but he figures out how to sell the home without Betty's consent because he was trying to sell it for a while and Betty was stonewalling it as she does. So he was able to sell it behind her back. Hmm. But I do think, because originally he told her, he was like, I'll give you half of what we sell it for. Mm-hmm. I think she wanted to sell it for a certain amount. And he was like, no, we should sell it for this amount. And there was, it's also another way for her to stonewall. Mm-hmm. Right. But he's able to sell it under her nose, does it behind her back. And she is informed by her attorney at the time that he sold the house.
Okay.
So Betty, she's like at home. She's making like dinner for her parents who are coming into town visiting. And she gets this call that, hey, Dan sold the house. This is what you're going to get for it, blah, blah, blah. And she like serves dinner. She told her parents, I had to step out for a little bit. So Betty goes to the new home that Dan bought with Linda.
How does she know? Because of the kids?
Because of the kids.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, if they didn't have kids, he probably would have disappeared with Linda, honestly. Mm-hmm. Never told her where he was.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So she drives to the new home that Dan and Linda had bought, mm-hmm. and she tries to set the house on fire.
Whoa. Okay.
Her kids are in the house.
Oh, my God. She doesn't care.
No. And the fire doesn't work.
Oh, my God.
So she then drove her Suburban through the front door.
Through the front door, yes. Okay.
Yeah. So Dan, this is probably the only, like, Dan was never said to be violent with Betty. He doesn't really seem like that type of man, but that he gets kind of violent with Betty at this moment. He rips her out of the car, restrains her while someone's calling the police.
Not unwarranted.
Not unwarranted. I would have beat somebody's ass.
Listen, and he didn't. It doesn't seem like he did that.
No.
Yes. Yeah. Listen. Get. She's in. She's gonna hurt someone.
I know.
When you're trying to get her away from the danger.
There's also a butcher knife in the Suburban.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So Dan has Betty involuntarily committed,
as she should be,
because he has an MD.
Oh my God.
So he's like, hey, I'm Dan Broderick, MD. We need to commit this woman.
Oh no.
Which is a really gross use of power. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's ever actually a practicing doctor.
Yeah.
I don't think he did a residency or anything.
The lawyer thing.
Mm-mm.
That's just not a bad way to make that money.
So Betty's committed and she's put on a 72-hour involuntary hold. She's putting him...
Reasonable hold, yes.
But also...
Where's her family?
In a fucked up turn of events... Betty's parents just fly back to New York during this. Oh. They're like, we're going to leave.
Oh.
And Betty's just committed into the insane asylum, whatever you want to call it. And there's no one there to support her. Her parents just kind of seem to be like, we don't talk about Betty.
Right. Okay.
Like kind of brush her under the rug, which is really fucked up and sad.
Yeah.
Because it really seemed like Betty just really was desperate for someone to really love her.
Yeah.
And then sure. Unfortunate. Because it seems like her parents aren't going to do it, which sucks.
She might have been terribly insufferable and difficult at that point, too, you know?
Oh, for sure. But for her parents to be like, oh, you got committed? We're going to go.
Yeah.
We're actually going to go back to New York. So, bye.
Mm.
It's kind of fucked up. I don't know. It's your kid. I don't know. I mean, maybe they were fed up at this point. Yeah. Maybe they just spent like the last 2 days listening to her like bitch about Dan.
Right.
And they're like, okay, well...
Yeah.
It's time for us to go.
I know, but you have grandchildren.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. So Betty then leaves the hospital and she's still playing the victim. She goes out with her friends. She's like, can you believe that Dan had me committed? Like, how dare he? What a gross use of his power, like blah, blah, blah. And her friends are like, you drove the car through the front door.
You tried to kill everyone in the house. Arson. You committed arson.
You did some real.
You should be in prison.
Yeah, like you need some real help, girl. And it's just like, I can't imagine being her friends. And her friends eventually do come to the trial, kind of defend her.
Okay.
Because they're like, she lost her fucking mind when Dan left.
Oh, right. She lost her mind. Yeah.
They're not able to really support her because I don't know how you would support someone like I've never had a friend like this, thank God.
Yeah,
like, I don't know what I would do.
Challenging,
honestly. So all of this, like, her friends are like, we need to move on. You need to start a new chapter. This is clearly you and Dan are done. You need to find something else to focus on your life, you know. Betty says no. Once again, she digs her heels in, and this is when the voicemails happen.
Okay.
Which are a big part of the story.
Okay.
So Betty would leave numerous voice messages calling Dan an asshole, a shithead, calling Linda the whore and the office cunt.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, trigger warning for language, I guess, because these are bad.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Are they married yet? They're just...
No, they're not married yet.
Because he's... Okay. Okay. Okay.
Like, once again, I'm like, I'm fucking out of here.
You fair.
I don't care how hot you are. I don't care how that dick do.
I feel like now I think it might be the money. It's a lot of money. I don't know. Oh, no. It's no, because she's also been with this man since she was in her 20s.
I know. She's still in her 20s. Yeah.
I mean, it's.
So in one voice message, Betty says, quote, "I just want what's mine. That's all I've ever wanted. I don't give two shits about you. You're not worth spit."
Oh, nice. Except if you believed it, you wouldn't be doing all this.
I know. I know. In another message, she says, quote, "Fuckhead, come get the kids. I want to get rid of them, but I don't want to drive to your shitty neighborhood.
So mean.
Hurry up and come get them, asshole."
Oh, no.
And this is on like a voice answering machine. Her kids hear this.
It's so bad.
Yeah. Another one says, "Fuckhead and cunt, come get the kids. I actually love this machine. I can say whatever I want. Tell your kids you don't think it's wrong that you're screwing the cunt in the hall that has her legs wide open for anyone who comes by."
Okay.
"And you paid for it. God, you're got a sense of humor. I love it. You're all fucked."
Oh, no. At this point, if I'm the new girlfriend, I might have to have a word with this psycho bitch. You, how dare you?
I
talk about my hallway. You don't know
my hallway. Well, it sounds, I mean, Linda isn't completely innocent in this. There is some, can't confirm it, but Betty had been like getting ads for wrinkle cream and weight loss pills because she had gained a bunch of weight during this time because it's just the cortisol level spike.
Yeah. That,
you know, like yes. Linda was like sending her kind of shady shit.
Oh, like they were feeding into it.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, no.
And she's like, "Oh, you want to play, bitch? I'll play too," type of situation, which
as you might be tempted to do.
Yeah, because she's also fucking 14 years younger.
Yeah, and this woman keeps leaving the nastiest voicemails.
She keeps calling me the cunt. Like,
I can't. So maybe you do want to send her a ring. Yeah, you want to be like,
I'm sure her and her friends were probably sitting around having a wine night being like, "Oh my God, what a psycho. We should fuck with her, you
definitely
know?"
Definitely.
Yeah.
And again, Dan is the problem here.
Absolutely.
He's the root of the problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like it's no man is worth this.
No. Not for either of them.
For being harassed.
No human.
No, honestly. Mm-mm. So Dan leaves these messages on the answering machine. Just leaves them there and even starts having his secretary and receptionist start transcribing them for him. And the secretaries are like, "I still am triggered by that woman's voice."
Wow.
They're like, she was vile.
Wow.
Truly vile. And they're transcribing all of it to bring to court.
Yes, of course.
To basically prove that Betty is an unfit parent, which I think we can all agree
at this point.
Probably not great.
Yeah. No. Really bad.
Yeah. And like, it's really affecting the kids at this point too, unfortunately. He then, Dan, punches this up a notch when he has Linda record the message on the answering machine of like, "Hi, you've reached the Broderick's. Leave a message after the beep." It's Linda.
Why would he do that?
Because he wants to antagonize her so he has more evidence.
Maybe.
It's all a fucking game for both of them, it feels like.
Could be, yeah.
So Betty leaves hundreds of these messages at this point. It's multiple times a day.
Oh, wow.
Dan could have just changed his number.
It's true.
You know, or like just gotten rid of the answering machine. But he wants everyone to hear it. He wants the kids to hear it, I guess. But sadly, no one's really looking out for the kids.
Mm.
There's also the infamous, it's called the Danny phone call. I don't know if you've heard this. Their third child, Danny. Dan starts recording like phone conversations that Betty's having with the kids because she's also saying really vile shit to the kids as well.
Jesus.
And so Danny is on the phone with Betty, their little boy. I think he's 10 or 11 at this point. And he's asking her, he's like, "Why do you keep saying all these really bad words? Just stop. I just want to hang out with you. I just want to be with you." And she was like, kind of mocking him and also saying, "Well, it's not my fault your daddy ruined our fucking lives. He's fucking the office cunt."
Yikes. To her 10-year-old. I can't.
To a 10-year-old. To her son.
Yeah.
And he's like, "You gotta stop saying that. You're just making it worse. I don't care who daddy dates. I just want to hang out with you, mommy." You know, just like being a little boy.
Yeah. I was like, "I don't understand what the big deal is here."
Yeah.
Like,
and
but
she's
you're
like,
being mean is all I can tell.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You're being mean.
Yeah. And she's like, "You can't hang out with me because daddy won't give me money." It's like what she tells him.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, "His daddy won't give you money because you're being mean and you're saying bad words." And she's like, "I hate your fucking daddy." And just.
Yeah. Well, that's obvious.
Really awful things. And like during this time, also Lee, their second oldest daughter, she starts to have a substance abuse problem.
Mm. How old is she at the time?
Like a teenager, like a young teenager, like 14 maybe.
Oh.
It's not good. Yeah. But like, it's, look what she's fucking it's growing chaos. Up. It's chaos.
Kicks and her. Privileged chaos.
Yeah. Dan kicks her out. Okay. He's like, go live with your mom. Which is...
Let me throw him away.
Yeah.
Yep.
Really fucked up.
I bet... Yeah. Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so... Yeah. So Lee eventually comes to live with Betty, but Betty's also saying horrible things to her. I think she definitely does eventually get out of all this shit she was in, but it's just like, neither of your parents are looking out for you.
Yeah.
You know? Dan should have been like, let's put you in rehab. He like also takes her out of the will.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Your daughter is clearly hurting because of the shit you're doing with your ex-wife. Maybe... Zoom out, bud.
Right.
What are you trying to win here? So it's just, yeah, it's getting really toxic, really volatile, obviously. And so Dan's also giving Betty voluntary spousal support. I think I mentioned this earlier. But he starts doing this thing. I don't think this is legal, but I guess because it's voluntary, he can do this. He starts, like, docking money anytime she, like, leaves a gross voice message or, like, uses a...
Okay.
Like, oh, you called her a cunt again. I'm going to take $100 out of your spousal support. Like, just
reasonably so, again.
Breaks the restraining order, and, like, he, like, basically does something. There's times where, like, she ends up owing money. She doesn't give him any money, but,
right.
You know, it's more about the principle of it. Because it's all voluntary at this point. Yeah. Because they're still figuring out their financial situation, even though they are divorced.
Wow.
Like I said.
She's got no power.
Unfortunately.
At this point, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
I think that's probably part of it, too. She's like, you took everything from me.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, during this time also, Betty would be thrown in jail a few times because she was breaking the restraining orders and, like, calling them and harassing them. And that violates the restraining orders. She'll do 3 or 5 stint days in jail. Mm. But she kept fucking doing it.
Wow.
Like, the commitment is crazy. So, like I said... Betty goes through a bunch of different divorce attorneys because she fires a bunch and they just quit because of her behavior. But Betty and Dan's divorce is finalized in 1989. Early 1989.
So, like, how many years have they been? Has this been, like, 10 years of...
So, he...
6 years of... How many years
have they... Like, Christmas 1984 is when Dan's done.
Okay. So, 4 or 5 years.
February 1985 is when he files.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then...
So this 1989 is kind of, like, when the money stuff...
Okay.
Gets figured out. He, like, was able to get, like, a divorce earlier, but they were still doing, like, the legal battles about the money.
And then there was issues with Linda for years before that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the last 10 years have been bad.
Yeah, the AS just sucks for them, yeah, essentially. Yeah. So Betty gets a lump sum of a little over $1 million. But all the court fees and having to pay Dan for things like the repair to their home when she drove the car through. He also charges her for the voluntary commitment or involuntary commitment.
The fees for that?
Yes. He charges her like just up the ass for everything.
Okay.
It's like, you didn't have to fucking do that, bro.
Right.
If you really want this woman out of your life, just give her the money.
I know. That is so true.
It's like kind of petty.
It's weird.
It's like petty in a way that like I don't appreciate because I love pettiness, but I'm also... like,
yeah,
what is it worth for you mm-hmm. at the end?
Mm-hmm.
So she ends up getting around like $2,500 or $25,000.
Oh my
god, after all the fees,
Jesus Christ,
yeah. And she does get about $12,000 in spousal support per month,
okay,
which is about $40,000 in today's money, which is a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And it's, how long does that last though?
Until she gets remarried,
okay, then
or until Dan dies.
Okay, I'm never getting remarried,
I know. Sorry.
Yeah.
Who needs it? Right? Mm-hmm. I'll buy a boyfriend at this point. But it's also, Betty's pissed because she knows how much Dan makes.
Girl, you got 40% of it? Or maybe he makes many.
No, he makes way more.
He makes more than $100,000 a month and she's getting $40,000 a month.
I think he's making more now.
Yeah. Okay.
I think when they first bought their La Jolla home, he was making like six figures, like late or
so
low.
So more. Should we? Oh, I can't. Again, I cannot fathom.
I can't fathom it either. I just don't think we're
so
fucking.
So much money.
I know.
Okay.
But she doesn't think it's enough. So there's also.
Well, comparatively, then she must know.
No, she's like, I fucking know how much he's making and I know how much his assets are worth. And so she's like, he fucked me.
Okay. And no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
And I'm sure he probably did.
Yeah, because you. Made it a war.
Yeah.
The two of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about winning.
Mm-hmm. This is basically like kind of pennies to what Dan's making.
Okay.
So she felt like she deserved more because she supported and helped Dan build the life that he's living now. And she was basically, she was like, I was just discarded and replaced.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's replaced by a newer model. So things get worse in Peg's eyes in 1989 because Dan and Linda also get engaged. Mm-hmm. And they get engaged very publicly.
Okay.
He proposes to her in a bar with a bunch of their friends that Betty and Dan had been friends with.
Wow. Okay.
And now it's Linda and Dan. But he really was kind of fucking replaced.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
It'll happen.
Mm-hmm. And they eventually get married on April 22nd, 1989, which is 10 days after what would have been Dan and Betty's 20-year wedding anniversary, which is also kind of shady. If you know that this woman is this toxic and this volatile, maybe just push it to June.
Honestly.
You know?
October even.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe just wait, you know, I don't know, have a Christmas wedding. I don't fucking know. Just don't do it in April.
But
these people are kind of petty.
April, and also April in San Diego. It's probably a good time of year. It's probably spring's nice.
I feel like May would have been just as nice. Yeah. Early May, 2 weeks later. Sure. Just let the woman have April.
I mean, it wasn't on the day of their...
No, but I think, I'm just thinking in like Betty's eyes. You know.
Oh, yeah. It could be a month later and she'd be like, oh,
that's true.
She would find a thing.
Yeah. And this is Dan and Linda on their wedding day.
You know what? Yeah. I see it, I guess.
See it. He's an attractive man.
Yeah.
And she is beautiful as well. And this is, I think I have another one. Yeah. This is all of them with their Betty and Dan's kids.
Okay. Yeah. She looks, you know who he looks like? He looks like Bob Saget a little bit.
He does kind of give a little bit Bob Saget.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
Like 90s.
Yeah. So Betty's now living in a condo. She, like, at some point, Dan had bought her, gave her, not a down payment, like, he had bought her a house in La Jolla on a nicer neighborhood. They basically had bought the lot and were going to tear down the house.
Okay.
Betty, in her eyes or in her brain, she was, like, telling friends, she was like, we're going to tear this down. We're going to build something else. We're going to work it out. We're going to fix things. And this is our new fresh start.
Hmm.
And this kind of got back to Dan. He's like, fucking no. What the hell? Mm. This is kind of a couple years prior. Betty basically refused to live in that property because it's like kind of a tear down anyways. She's like, I'm not doing it. Yeah.
Okay.
So she's living in a condo and she's basically kind of a self-pity.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm living in this condo because Dan fucked me. It's like, you could probably live something better, but you're not going to, you know, whatever. She's also gained about 60 pounds because of the just fucking stress that she's put on herself in this scenario. Yes. Probably not taking care of herself. She's really fixating and focusing on Linda and Dan and their life. There was Instagram at this time. She would have been.
Oh, if there was.
If there was.
What?
No. If there was Instagram.
I was like, my brain went berserk. I was like, whenever she tells
me. Did she time travel?
This is what happens. And I was like, oh, wow.
Instagram in the 90s?
I don't remember it like that.
I don't know. No, if there was Instagram, you know she'd have been like up all night, like refreshing
their. Or Twitter. Facebook, any of it.
Yeah, refreshing pages, like just looking for an update. She would have been, pretty obsessed online. But she didn't have that, but I'm just saying she did. She was also like early 40s and she thinks her life is over. And at some point in 1989, she gets hold of a 38 caliber Smith & Wesson gun.
Yeah, okay. I'm actually surprised it took that long at this point. She's been crazy for a minute.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some sources that say she purchased it. There are some sources that say she got it from Kim's boyfriend.
Whose boyfriend?
Kim, her oldest daughter.
Oh, okay.
Well, I hope not, because that would be on Kim's conscience forever, you know?
Kim wouldn't be that hard to buy a gun.
As a white woman in San Diego, probably not.
I was like, she probably just bought it.
Look like a housewife, yeah. I'm just saying, there's a mixed bag on the sources when it comes to what happened there. So on the night of November 14th, 1989, Linda's laying in bed with her son, Danny, cuddled up next to her. because he's doing a visitation, and she's spiraling.
Wait, Linda has her own. Wait, Betty is.
Sorry, I put Linda.
Betty. Who's? Whoopsies. When did Linda have a son?
No, sorry. On the night, November 4th, 1989, Betty is laying in bed with her son Danny, curled up to her because she is spiraling. Think about all of this stuff.
Still,
she thinks her life is over. She thinks that Dan betrayed her. She thinks that
he did.
Linda's
He did. But your life's not over.
Linda's a cunt.
It's about to be.
Yeah. You've all fucked me over. I've been so fucked over my entire life. I am.
Okay. Yeah.
She described it as later in the interviews, she was saying that movie, the Superman movie, where you're not going to know this. I know this. But Christopher Reeves, he basically spins the world backwards to time travel. But he's in so much pain, he's screaming, and the whole world can hear him screaming as he's doing it. She said she felt like that. She's like, I just wanted to scream, and I wanted the whole world to hear. Just a woman in some deep pain.
Okay.
Who'd been like really fucked over, but has also done a lot of fucking over. Let's be real. So at some point in the night, she gets up and leaves her condo and heads to Dan and Linda's home on Cypress Ave in the Marston Hills neighborhood. This is the same home she drove the Suburban into. So Betty had taken a key off of her daughter Kim's key ring to the house. And Kim says later in later interview, she's like, I don't remember her ever taking it. I don't know how she got it. She just snuck it. And it probably haunts her to this day.
Yeah.
Because this is how she gets in the home. Dan Linda's home. So Betty makes her way to the master bedroom. Dan and Linda are laying in bed. It's now kind of well into the morning. It's almost 5 a.m. What happens next becomes a major issue at the trial because Betty's version changes over time, I will say. So the general accepted prosecution version is this. Betty entered the room and opened fire, firing 5 rounds. So she shoots Linda first. I think the second round is what kills Linda. It hits her spinal cord and kind of kills her instantly. But the coroner states that Dan was probably alive for about 30 minutes after he was shot.
Oh.
But he does also die.
Damn. Were the kids in the house?
No, because Danny and Rhett were at her house, at the condo.
Okay. And Kim and Lee, the other girls are older.
We're older, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But there is an ovulation counter in the bathroom.
Oh, they were going to have a baby.
They said they wanted 5 kids, Dan and Linda.
Sorry, he wanted 5 more kids with Linda?
Uh-huh.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Sir, he's like, I got all this money.
Yeah. I'm a good Catholic boy.
I need to do something with it.
Linda was also Catholic, and I think Catholics like to have kids.
5?
5 is a lot. Mm. Yeah.
That's why every day I look online, and it's like, people aren't having, we're going to die. The humanity is destroyed because women don't want to have 5 kids.
Yeah.
After, with a man who already has 4.
Yeah.
Or could have had 10.
Yeah.
15.
15? Are you Mormon? What's going on? Jesus. So Dan at some point also tries to grab the phone, but
sorry.
Betty.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but Betty rips the line in half with her bare hands.
Whoa.
She like, that rips out of the wall. She like rips the line. It's like,
you know, those little thin phone. Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be easy to do.
It would be easy.
Wind it.
Yeah. You're going to have a lot of rage.
You do. And I think it probably would hurt a little bit.
It probably would hurt. After leaving the home, Betty calls a few friends and tells them what she did.
Okay.
She's like, I killed him in the whore.
Oh, God.
But they're all like, this is a sick fucking joke, and hang up on her. This is also like 6 a.m. That she's like calling these people and saying these things.
She was so fucking sick in the head.
I know. People are probably like, I haven't had coffee yet. I cannot do this with you.
And it's not cool. Yeah, like you're calling a woman the whore at 6 a.m. Can't get fucked, please.
Right.
Stop.
Stop, please.
Stop.
And I think that's probably why her friends were like, dude, like, what the fuck, man?
I'm not dealing with your bullshit today.
Yeah, like I said, I have not had coffee yet.
You're drunk.
You're crazy. Yeah. Yes. So she eventually calls Lee, who was the only kid that she had custody of.
Okay.
And I really do think Dan was like,
oh, because he left.
Basically kicked her out, which is fucked up in itself.
It's bad.
Like I said, these people have no intention of actually like doing bull by their kids. So she calls Lee and tells her what happens. She's like, I think I killed them. And she says initially that she was going to go over there and kill herself in front of them.
They do say that sometimes.
She's like, I wanted them to see like my blood on the walls. And I kind of think maybe she was planning on killing them both and then killing herself.
Yep.
But maybe fired too many rounds and then didn't have a bullet for herself, or like just couldn't do it.
Is there not? I guess so.
A Smith and Wesson.
She fired five rounds.
I think a Smith and Wesson is like the like
the spin.
Yeah,
the revolver,
the spinny revolver thing. I think there's only have five.
I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
I think there would be more than five though.
I'm gonna look at
it. Okay.
I'm gonna look at it. Through
chat.
through time travel, Smith. And I'm gonna look like a fucking crazy person Wesson. Looking up guns.
Will you? Oh. Will you though?
38. Yeah, it is a revolver. So it only has five.
Oh. Okay.
So okay. I think she wanted to go over there. She's like, death do his part. I'm gonna kill you, then I kill myself.
The two of them and yourself, and then she just didn't care about the kids whatsoever.
No, I don't think either of them really cared about the kids in the way that they should have.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Just poor woman.
I know.
I'm thinking about Linda. Just poor woman.
Linda needed to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
I know she was deeply in love with Dan, but I don't know if I would have dealt with this.
My God.
So, yeah. So she calls Lee, tells her what happens. They call a defense attorney, and then Betty turns herself in. I think the reason why I think she was maybe planning on killing herself is because she just turns herself in right away. I think she was smart enough to maybe have a plan otherwise, but I think she like
didn't plan it like this.
Yeah. She's like, shit, I lost all the bullets. I don't have any more bullets.
There are other ways to kill yourself.
True. True. But maybe she also didn't have the tulips to do it.
I guess so. Maybe. Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah. So police go to the home and find Dan and Linda. They are now both deceased. Dan was 44. Linda was 28.
They're both so young.
I know.
28. That man is too old for you, ma'am.
I know. I know, grown. He's attractive, but like...
Too grown.
Yeah.
He's got too much baggage.
He's got... Like,
in fact, if he loved her...
He probably...
He might have said, I'm so sorry. Please go and live your life, you youthful angel.
Yeah.
Go be a mermaid. Why are you? You
don't be a mermaid on the beach in San Diego.
Yes,
like you don't. You do not need to deal with my shit.
Yes,
or be like, hey, call me when you're 30. I clearly need to figure out.
I need a minute.
Some shit over here with this woman who's lost her goddamn mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's revisit this
if we care that deeply about each other.
If we care that deeply about each other, if maybe the timing's right. Mm-mm. But they didn't.
No, he wouldn't.
He wouldn't dare.
Them.
No.
No. Not putting his needs above everyone else's?
Mm-mm, absolutely not. No. So when they get to the trial, because basically Linda turns herself in. They're like, oh, well, this is...
Betty.
Sorry. Goddamn. So Betty goes to trial, like, pretty much immediately, because also this becomes like a media circus, because people hear the story, fucking ex-wife scorned, kills new wife, mistress.
Watch out, boys.
Yeah.
Watch your backs.
I mean, that was the running joke among all the attorneys in San Diego.
Change your locks.
Yeah. Let's not get Betty Broderick'd.
Mm-hmm.
Was kind of the joke, unfortunately. So this trial really isn't about, like, we know she admits she did it, right? So it's like a, not like a whodunit, it's like a why.
Mm-hmm.
So Betty admits she pulled the trigger in the first trial. So the question becomes, why did she do it? And what was her state of mind? And if this was like a planned double murder, or if this was a like kind of a final break explosion after years of a divorce hell, essentially.
Hmm.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I know you have opinions. Go on.
I just didn't realize I would divulge that I'm going for my own divorce during this story.
You know, I thought about that. I'm sorry.
It was unplanned, but I was just like, God damn. Thank you. I just think it's interesting.
It's interesting.
Coinciding.
Whoopsies.
I didn't realize it until episode two, and I was like, oh.
You're like, so oh, strange. Shit.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in the first trial, they want to charge Betty with two counts of first-degree murder, which is premeditated.
Well, she bought the gun and went to the kid. I would say reasonable assumption.
Yeah, I would. I mean,
she stole the key. She went in there to do some harm. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you argue. I know. That's why
tell
it's
you.
So interesting.
I'm going to tell you right now.
Go on.
So the prosecution is like, this was planned. This is not a woman snapping in the moment.
Obviously. Yes.
This, their argument is that they
escalated,
has a gun, like whether she took it from Kim's boyfriend or she bought it. Like, she had a gun. Mm-hmm. She drove it to Dan Lynn's house in the early morning hours and she used a key to get in. She went upstairs. They were sleeping. She fired 5 shots.
She tried to hurt this man 2 other times as
yes,
well.
Yes, absolutely. So they also point out that Betty had been threatening Dan for years, mm-hmm. also had a couple attempts and like some harm. She had left hundreds of awful voicemails.
Mm-mm. Yeah, this is, yeah.
Yeah, and she had violated multiple restraining orders. She had broken into the house. She had damaged their property. She had drove her fucking car through their front door.
A menace.
Yeah, and she just could not let go of her anger towards Dan and Linda.
Yeah.
She was just, hell hath no fury.
It really seems to have completely consumed her.
Yeah, it really, it
like rotted.
Yeah. So the prosecution is basically saying, this isn't a bad moment. This wasn't like mm-hmm. a woman snapping after years of escalation. They're like, she did this with intent. She wanted to kill them. So
you probably could have watched it happen in slow motion. Mm-hmm. This is all.
Yeah. So the defense is telling a different story.
Okay.
So the defense is like, yes, Betty killed them, but we cannot underestimate and understand everything unless you look at what came before.
Okay, fine.
So they focus on the fact that Betty has supported Dan through medical and law school. She had raised his kids. She had helped him build his career. And once he became successful, he threw her away for a younger model.
He did. He did.
He absolutely did. And they would argue that Dan used his knowledge of money, his connections in the legal world to grind Betty down in the divorce. And she was just emotionally destroyed.
Potentially, yes.
I would say that's probably true.
At least some of that is true.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that warrants all the shit that Betty did.
Exactly. Yeah. At the end of the day, it's like, it does, all of it can be true, and yet you still
did this.
You did all of this.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. I really do think Betty like went there with the intent to kill them and herself.
Probably.
Yeah. So the defense is saying that Betty's innocent.
She's not.
She's not. Sorry, that she's not innocent, but that she fucking snapped.
Well,
which I think is probably where it snapped came from on oxygen.
Yeah, potentially. Well, she's not innocent. Not my book. That is guilty as fuck.
Yeah. So prosecution puts all this out there. And basically the jury is deadlocked. They deliberate for 4 days. And they're like, we are really struggling because also Betty does go up on the stand in the first trial. And she says that she went in the house that morning to confront Dan. And like I said, to possibly kill herself in front of both of them. She claims that she did not go in there with a plan to murder both of them. But according to Betty, when she was in the bedroom, everything was a blur. She's like, I don't know what happened. Just things just went, I don't remember. I saw red, essentially. So she's saying it was impulsive.
I think there is a world in which she was at a low. Again, we haven't talked about it, but it seems like somebody is doing a lot of substancing.
It really didn't come up in my research, yeah, honestly.
Like, okay, so I'm speculating, but I imagine
she's probably hitting the Sauv Blanc pretty hard.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But it's still, maybe you did go in there and you really wanted to just make him suffer, but not properly appreciating how much hate you have for this woman and mm-hmm. how triggering it would be. And again, I'm not sure what the difference is. Yeah. It does to me, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You knew that you went in there with a weapon.
I know.
And whatever happened, I don't know. And I guess the law tries to differentiate, but sometimes I'm not sure.
This is something I really couldn't be a lawyer.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, this is, I'm sorry, she killed 2 people. Like,
yes.
This is a woman.
After promising to hurt them, trying to hurt them, stalking, harassing.
Yeah. Like, I took it out of here, but there was a moment where she, when Dan and Linda got engaged, she broke in and stole their wedding guest list, the only copy. And so Linda breaks into Betty's house.
Oh, God.
To try to steal it back.
Steal it back.
But she doesn't find it. But she finds this journal that Betty had been filling out about, like, how she wanted to hurt Linda and Dan.
Oh, no.
And she brings this to Dan. And she's like, hey, this is
more serious than you think.
And Dan brushes it off.
Of course he does.
Of course he does. Also, Linda wanted Dan to wear a bulletproof vest at his fucking wedding, but to her.
Oh, wow.
Once again.
Oh, wow.
Could never. I would be like, we need to fucking chill for a while.
Yeah.
So it's just like this history of violent, visceral behavior over and over and over. What did you think was going to happen? I don't know. I guess he probably...
They call it, I don't know. Laura Richards calls stalking and her murders in slow motion. Where you can fucking see.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Inevitably.
So they're like, well, Betty went into the house. She had a weapon. She went in there to kill him. Betty says, it was all a blur. I was going to go there. I was going to kill myself. And the jury's like, well, fuck. On one hand, Betty killed two people. But on the other hand, they're hearing the years of the ugly divorce details. They're hearing all the shit that Dan did, the kind of the shady shit, and the gaslighting and the manipulating. And with Betty's testimony, they're like, she doesn't really seem like a cold, calculated killer. She seems like a really broken, hurt and damaged woman. Mm. So they're like, there's more going on here psychologically.
I am actually shocked that the jury had been that thoughtful about it.
One of the people that were deadlocked was a man.
I'm sitting here and I'm like, throw away the key.
Get this bitch out of here.
I get it. And yet I wouldn't kill a bitch.
I know.
My husband and his whore. Oh. I can't. Like,
and you know, poop in his car or something.
Anyway, so like, kudos to her legal team.
Yeah.
And for her, I guess, her testimony and this really, I don't know, very, I don't know, compassionate, open-minded jury for like, yeah, actually when they, having like, this conversation.
There was like 10 of them were like, first degree murder, do it. Two of them were deadlocked. One of them was a man. He said later, I don't understand what she didn't do earlier.
That man has been through some stuff.
Yeah. That man has seen some shit. Regardless, by November 1989, the jury cannot agree. They ended up being deadlocked.
Wow.
So the judge declares a mistrial. First trial is mistrial.
That is wild.
I know. So this is a pretty big moment because it shows us like how divided people are on Betty as a person and what she did. So some people saw her as a murderer, full stop. But others saw her as a woman who had been pushed and humiliated and mostly destroyed until she finally fucking broke. Which I think both can be true,
sure.
Honestly. And that public divide really becomes the whole legacy of this case, I think, in general. It's the reason why I'm covering this case, because I do think, even though it has been, I don't know, it's like open and shut in a lot of ways, but it's still something that...
Yeah, there's nuance.
There's nuance. There's a conversation still here.
Yeah.
And I'll also get into further why I talked about it specifically now. But so in 1991, the prosecution decides to try Betty again. Obviously, they're not going to be like, oh, well, mistrial. Bye. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So trial number two. And this time the prosecution is much more focused.
They do have a better chance at it the second time around.
So they know what worked and what didn't work for the first time. And I think a big part of it, too, is the first trial, they didn't make her go into specifics of what happened in the house when she was on the stand. And the second time, the prosecutor, she was a female. I can't remember her name right now. Female. Gross. She was a woman. She was like, no. What did you do every step of the way?
And break like, it down how violent
break it,
was.
Down for me. And how many shots did you fire? When did you fire this shot? When did you fire this shot? When did you fire? And like,
smart.
Yeah. She's like, you need to explain to me what fucking happened. And so I think that makes it more of like, it was less of a quote unquote blur. Like Betty was saying, like, or I just saw red.
Yep.
It was like, I need you to break it down for me.
Yep.
And obviously they still do the whole, what?
Well, I'm just saying then you can kind of look at the cruelty of it.
Yeah, totally. That, I think that's what she was trying to emphasize.
Yeah.
And I think they talked a lot about Betty and Dan's marriage still. I think it's a big part of this trial. But prosecution's like, whatever happened in the divorce, she still made choices that morning. Mm-hmm. So like she had the gun, she drove to the house, she used the key, she went upstairs and she shot them and she left. I think the leaving too is a big part of it as well. And it kind of becomes like, I guess, the cleanest version of the argument, because they're like, she did all of these steps deliberately. This wasn't like a, she was in a psychosis, she had been sleeping, she wasn't on pills, you know, there's none of that. Yeah. It's like, she made the absolute step every fucking time. She made that decision, she walked upstairs and she did it.
Yes.
You know, whether she
walked up there with
the intent of killing herself.
To yeah. kill them.
Mm-hmm.
You put yourself in a situation where you are increasingly likely to hurt someone
mm-hmm.
every step of the way.
Yeah. Yeah. This, I mean, not to get political, but this made me think of the Kyle Rittenhouse situation.
Yeah.
Where he walked into a fucking protest with an AK.
Yeah.
I still can't believe. Anyways, he got bitten by a brown recluse recently and he was in the hospital.
Is this a spider?
Yeah.
Nice.
A very poisonous spider.
I've heard.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and send the brown recluse a care package.
Sorry. That can be the next sticker.
Yeah.
Like a little, like a diva.
Yeah. A little spider diva. It's clacking, clacking nails. That's really funny.
Just getting back at the racists. One bite at a time. Yep. Baby.
One bite at a time.
Get a good drag name.
I know. All right. Let's
some kind of brown recluse right. tie in with the drag. I can't. So good.
Okay. So the defense still tries to explain Betty's emotional state and the years of conflict that led to the shooting of Dan and Linda. And the second trial is harder for them. So there's some diminished capacity arguments that was in the first trial that basically her mental state was diminished, but like they
agreed.
Didn't.
Sure.
Yeah. But they don't allow them this time, or they allow less of the argument to be presented.
And I wonder if that's just like the judge decides.
Yeah. I'm wondering.
So I'm like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's and just so, a different person's opinion about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The trial this time becomes less about Betty and Dan's whole marriage, everything leading up to this, and it's more specifically about the day of the events, unfortunately. And they also, I think this time they play the Danny recording where she's like,
oh,
saying some really fucked up shit to her 10-year-old son about.
Oh, that is not helpful.
Yeah, and but I think
it is context.
Mm-hmm. Betty does testify again. Kind of saved
us. Okay.
She does the same story.
That's interesting, too, because I don't think your lawyers typically want you to do that.
No. But she probably insisted, and they're probably like, whatever.
She might have, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, like I said, this time, the prosecution was like, I need you to explain to me every fucking step of that day, of that morning. And it probably did not. It sounds like it didn't work in her favor.
Yep.
Yeah. So, it's... there is still a debate within the jury, though. In December of 1991. So they reach a verdict and they find her guilty on 2 counts of second degree murder, which is lesser than first degree murder. So most of the jurors, after the Danny recording specifically, they wanted to give her first degree. But there was a couple that are like, I don't know. I don't think we should do that. I think it maybe should be second degree or manslaughter, because they wanted to give Betty, they wanted to give Betty some time, but they wanted to give her a lesser sentence.
She killed 2 people
in their beds.
And I feel like from where I'm sitting, I'm like, maybe you could argue that like one of them wasn't premeditated.
Yeah.
But then when one person is now shot
mm-hmm.
and dead, she's shot more than one time.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to go in and kill the second person. Now, is that not first degree murder? Because you definitely had time to be like, oh, this is fucked. This got away from me.
Yeah. I mean, but they could also be like, oh, well, like, I just kept shooting and I accidentally shot them the second person. There's so many ways you could spin that argument.
So
she killed 2 fucking people. I kind of fucking hate lawyers.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Okay, but she killed 2 people. She needs to be in prison for life.
Yeah. So there's a couple jurors that are like, we want second degree or manslaughter.
Very generous.
Yeah. Actually, I think they specifically want manslaughter.
That is crazy.
That is crazy. But they all agree eventually to do second degree murder. And okay. So she is convicted of second degree murder in December of 1991. But she's given the highest sentence, which is basically a life sentence. It's 32 years. And she is eligible for parole, but she never gets parole.
I wonder if she's grown a lot from this situation. Jesus.
No. So the jury is basically saying, quote, "We believe Betty intentionally killed Dan and Linda, but we are not fully convinced this rises to first degree murder." They're basically saying she went fucking crazy.
Okay. Yes. A crazy woman did this.
Yeah.
But I feel like the difference between not being conscious of what you're doing is very different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first degree murder is you walked in with a premeditated intention.
What else is there? I would argue that she broke into their home with a gun and walked into their bedroom.
I know. I would argue that.
And then she killed him.
Yeah. I think in black white terms, yes. But I think some people are like, but it's, Betty also sold it on the stand. She was like, I walked in there to kill myself in front of them.
Okay, then what went wrong? Tell me more about that.
She said she walked in, she said, I'm going to kill myself in front of them. I want them to see it. I want them to see my hurt, my anger, my despair. But instead, they turned the gun on them.
No, I don't buy it. Because you could have killed yourself in your home. You could have killed yourself in the front door.
No, she wants to make it as theatrical as possible. Because still the war with Dan. Honestly, the thing she could have fucking done was kill Dan and then herself.
She could have killed Dan's wife and then killed herself.
Kill Linda and then herself.
Ooh.
Which would have been the most diabolical version.
That's true.
Maybe. I'm like, yeah.
Except I feel like Dan would have just been like, fine. What a tragedy. And then in 4 years, he's got another.
Here's Belinda.
I know he's the victim, but like, he's not the only victim in this story.
I would say
Linda's.
Linda's a victim for sure.
The victim in the story.
I think the kids are the victim in the story. The
kids are the victim. Yeah. Linda and the kids. I understand Linda's an adult. She was complicit to some of the chaos here, but like, she was also basically a child when she met him.
Mm-hmm. She was 21. She was very young. Yeah. And he was a fully grown man.
Really grown.
Yeah. With 4 kids.
Yes.
Yeah. And a wife. So Betty is sentenced to 32 years to life. In prison in 1992.
Good, as she should.
And she was denied parole every time. So after all this, Betty Broderick spent the rest of her life in prison. She was denied parole multiple times, and for decades she remained an incredibly polarizing figure. Some people saw her as a cold-blooded murderer who walked into a bedroom and killed 2 people while they were sleeping. I think Meg is one of them.
Yes.
Other people saw her as a woman who had been emotionally destroyed by betrayal, divorce, humiliation, and the loss of the life she had thought she had built. And recently, the story reached its final chapter with Betty Broderick dying in prison on May 8th, 2026.
Hmm.
At the age of 78. That's why it popped up on my feed. I'm like, oh, we should do this.
Betty.
Yeah. But even with Betty gone, the debate around this case probably won't disappear anytime soon. I would agree with that sentence I wrote. Nice. Like, I agree. I'm like, oh yeah, I fucking wrote this, you dummy.
She hasn't done this in a while.
You're like, oh, that was really a really good sentence.
How insightful. I'm
like, fucking idiot. Because the story is not just about a bad marriage. It's not about cheating, money, custody, or revenge. It's about what can happen when love turns into resentment, mm-hmm. when a life someone thought was secure completely falls apart, and when pain becomes so consuming that it starts to justify things that can never be justified.
Yes, things can never be justified.
And I think that's the hardest part of the Betty Broderick story. You can look at everything Betty went through and understand why she felt broken. You can understand the humiliation, the rage, the grief, and the feeling that the entire life had been taken from her. But understanding is not the same thing as excusing. At the end of the day, Dan and Linda were killed in their bed. 2 people lost their lives. 4 children lost both of their parents in a completely different way. And Betty made the choice to pick up that gun, walk into that house, and pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this case sits in an uncomfortable gray area where more than one thing can be true at the same time. Love can absolutely mess people up. Divorce can destroy people. Betrayal can make someone feel like they're losing their mind. But personal responsibility still matters. At the end of the day, Betty Broderick's story is not just a story about what someone did to her. It's a story about what she chose to do with all the anger, grief, and pain. And that is the Betty Broderick story.
Betty needed to get a fucking grip.
Betty needed a Sauve Blanc psychosis.
She was in one.
She needed to be in a Margaritaville psychosis.
That's a different type. That's a different type. I wouldn't even call that a psychosis.
I called that a good type.
Yeah, she just never fucking got a grip.
No.
And it's important. It's important to get a grip. So please do that.
Our tip for today. Get a fucking grip.
Yeah, because yes, sometimes we're irrationally angry. Sometimes we're deeply hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes injustices cannot be rectified in life. It is just what it is. And the
That's life, baby.
It is fucking life. Mm-hmm. Fucking pull your shit together. Yes. And this is what happens when you absolutely refuse to do that.
Yeah. Pull up your granny panties. Write it out.
She didn't even need to be, like, she was a wealthy woman.
I know. She could have been... She had very fancy granny panties.
No, she... Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Oh, 60 pounds later, potentially. But, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
No, she's exactly where she needs to be. God bless them.
Save them souls.
Yeah, she... Yeah. Bad. Those poor children, you're right. They were really...
The unfortunate.
Really messy.
Fodder.
I'm over here. Oh, yeah, I understand what it's like to have a chaotic home life. That is some shit that you cannot... really fathom. That's
no.
crazy.
No. Yeah.
Poor things.
I know. It's
and money can't buy you class.
Nope. It can buy you a lot of things, but it cannot buy you
nope. class. You can still have a very white trash type of lifestyle.
Yeah.
Even with six figure monthly incomes.
Seriously. Yeah. In the '80s.
Oof.
It was crazy.
Well, thank you. I had a blast. I always do. You know, the true crime stories are the ones that I relate to most because human nature makes a lot of sense to me. Like, a lot of, like, I can always see one side or two sides of a story. It's pretty easy for me to put myself in A or B situation. But,
yeah. I really thought this was going to be a one-off episode. But this was definitely. Yeah. But I was like, damn, this is getting way more complicated. And, like, just crazier.
Absolutely insane.
Crazier. And I do think... there's been a lot of depiction of Betty in the media that kind of give her more of a positive light. And I don't really know if that's fair. I remember Dirty John being like, damn, that really fucking sucks for her. And I kind of understand. Mm. Not, I don't understand. But, you know, I was like, he had it coming. Chicago, you know, he had it coming.
Yeah.
You know, but then I'm like, I look further into the story, like the actual story. I'm like, damn, she really was losing her fucking mind for a long time.
Yeah. You don't just go and kill two people. It takes
some build up.
There's something going on.
There's something deeply, deeply wrong. And it's really unfortunate that, just like her kids now have to live without both their parents.
Yes.
And have had to live without both of their parents. They've done some interviews like early 90s. They did like Oprah in the early 90s.
Oh, really? The kids did?
Uh-huh. But they haven't done anything recent. I know one of the daughters wrote a book. I think Kim wrote a book. But I didn't read it because I don't have time.
I'm surprised you haven't.
How fucking dare I?
That you didn't make time.
Yeah, I'm a goddamn monster. I know.
Okay, well, good to know. What's the name of, do you remember the name of the book? I might have to check it out.
Let me look it up.
I'm going to have to check it out.
I mean, it's probably very interesting. Kim was the one. Kim testified against Betty at the trial. Lee testified for Betty at the trial, which I don't know how Thanksgiving goes after that. You know?
With the sisters.
Interesting. Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard. Listen, I don't know. I guess that would be very hard, but like.
But like, I know that Dan like basically kind of.
Disowned her?
Yeah.
Damn.
My Mom, the Kim Broderick story is by Kim Betty. Yeah. Betty Broderick, My Mom, the Kim Broderick story.
Okay, cool. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Loved it. I mean, loved talking about it.
Yeah, it's an interesting tale. Mm-hmm. It's one of the big true crime stories I try not to do, but, you know, it felt like one that we could still have.
It was up the Grimley Alley for sure.
Yeah, it's something we also
really... talk about some nonsense. That we just like to talk about men and their nonsense.
Oh.
Frankly.
All I heard was nonsense.
There's a theme. Okay. There's a theme here.
I just think it's still a story that has a conversation to be had in it. That's why I brought it up.
Sure.
And because she died recently, I was like, oh shit, we should maybe acknowledge this. So yeah, thanks for listening. Be sure to, you know, do the things, rate, review, subscribe, follow, and yeah, keep following, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, until next. Happy summer.
Happy summer.
God bless me. It's fucking summer. I have a lot to show her.
Okay, get me out of here. Okay, until next time.
Stay grimly curious. Stupid. Thank you so much for listening. Music by Alex Kingston and Adam McKinnon.
For podcast photos and updates, follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Grimly Podcast.
Be sure to rate and review, and we will see you next week for another episode. Bye, bitch.
2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.